Hi, everyone. This is Gary Barkalow with Sam Williamson, and we are together for another Basecamp conversation. And this one is unique, and we are really looking forward to this. We are actually going to be talking to three Basecamp members. I'm sure you all know them, and if you don't, if you're fairly new to Basecamp, you need to get to know them. One is John Hard, another is Jack Lenardy, and another is Barry Simpson. And what we want to ask them is basically this. And then, Sam, I'm going to ask you to kind of clarify my question after I'm done, add some color to it. We want to ask them this. How is it that you live the life that God has given you, specifically with your work, that God has given you work to do? It's, you're doing well in it. It's doing well for you. But your life is much bigger than your work. The glory, the weightiness, the splendor, the brilliance of your life cannot be fully expressed in your work. Even if you could form your work to be whatever you wanted it to be, it still couldn't contain your life, let alone when you can't choreograph and engineer everything. So how do you do your work, have a job, but also you're offering your life to the world in your work, outside of your work? You're just expanding the touch of the effect of your life out into the world. And so we see these three men doing this, and it's really amazing how they're doing it. We wanted them to talk about that part of their story tonight. Now, Sam, fix what I just said for me.
Well, it's interesting. I think that when we talk with guys about calling, I often see two kind of, battles going on. The first battle is we're just learning how to discover our calling. We're learning how to discover who it is that God made us, what it is that we have to bring. But as that gets clearer, the next sort of battle is, where do we bring it? How do we do it? What changes in our life? What adjustments do we have to make? How do we do it? You know, it's one thing to know what our calling is or to have some degree of clarity on it, and it's another thing to actually start walking into it. And one of the things that I really like is what I've heard about you guys, and as I've talked to you, you guys are doing a great job of both operating in your current job and your career, and you're bringing to the world something. You're bringing something, and you're sometimes it's baby steps, sometimes it's a lot of things, and I'm just really interested in hearing the things that you're doing and the adjustments you've made, but then what you're doing with your life.
Right.
And those adjustments.
And the thing I'd add to that, Sam, is that, yes, these guys...
You're going to clarify my clarification?
No, not quite. I'm going to affirm everything you've just said and your life. No. And these guys have made adjustments, sacrifices. You know, they've had to eliminate certain things, add certain things. They've made the adjustments, you know, some with pain, some with difficulty, some with ease, mm-hmm. in order to do this. So that's why we wanted to have the three of these guys, one after another, kind of tell their story, because, you know, our journeys are very unique in that way. So John Hard, why don't you start with your story, answering the question we've just talked about?
As far as what I'm doing at work, first, I see my calling as coming alongside another man or woman and connecting them with them on a really deep level, finding out where they are in their journey, probing, putting the pieces of their puzzle together, and then providing something that will move them forward in their journey, maybe just a word of hope or encouragement or some direction or something like that. And I guess 2 or 3 years ago was when I went to the calling intensive and really discovered that that's what my calling was. So 3 tax seasons ago, I'm a CPA, and I from January to April, I'm just working around the clock. And 3 tax seasons ago, I thought, well, I've got to work around the clock. I'm going to put my heart on the shelf for 3 months and then come back and get it. And I'm telling you, that was a stupid thing to do. And people would call, and I would have an opportunity to really jump into somebody's life, but I'm thinking, no, it's tax season. I have to work. I'm just going to not even go there, and I would just hang up the phone or end the appointment. 2 tax seasons ago, I said, I cannot do that anymore. So I made a commitment that anytime I got on the phone with a client, and typically the way it works is I get on a phone call, they ask a tax question. We talk about that for 5 to 10 minutes, and then an hour to hour and a half later, we have covered so many bases in their life on a spiritual level, related to their heart, their journey, whatever. And again, in tax season, that's hard to do, but I thought, okay, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to trust the Lord to work out my time and the pressure and the work. And that tax season, up until the last week of March, it was still difficult. There was still a lot of pressure, but I had numerous opportunities every week to do that, and it just worked out well. This last tax season, I tried to do the same thing, but those opportunities didn't show themselves, and the pressure, the client base is just continuing to build and build. And so this year, I am in the process of trying to hire somebody, and I've just got to hire some help to come do so much of the work that I do that'll free me up to be able to spend more time with clients or friends or whatever. That's really where I am right now.
So one of the things you're doing, John, is an adjustment you're making, in this case, is you're going to hire someone, which means it's going to hurt your income in some ways. I mean, you're taking, because you're going to have to be paying someone else to do some work.
It will.
But you're doing this, making this adjustment. I love what you said before. You said, I cannot do that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, describing putting your heart on the shelf. And there's something inside you that says, I can't do that anymore, even to the point where it'll cost you financially. I mean, I don't know how much it'll cost you, but you're willing to take some kind of cost hit because you're experiencing this desire in your heart to come alongside other people, come alongside and move them forward into their calling. I love that.
Yeah, and you just never know how that's going to work. It may be that I really do take a hit for the next year or two. It may be that God turns it around and makes it profitable.
Yeah.
To me, that's irrelevant. I have to do it.
Well, the thing I'm struck by with your story, John, is that, you know, actually what's kind of coming against the full expression of, you know, the glory of your life and offering that to people has actually been business success, right? All these clients coming in, all this pressure. And that's not normally what people complain about when they go, I just can't seem to walk in my calling and do what's on my heart. It's usually the opposite. It's usually, you know, work isn't going well. It's getting, you know, kind of iffy right now with my work. I guess what I'm hit by is both those things can distract us from our calling, and both have to be dealt with if we're going to live intentionally, and you're doing that.
Well, and that's true. And it's funny, in my situation, the increase in work, the increase in clients really goes against my heart because it requires me to put my nose to the grindstone, crunch numbers all day. My heart isn't built for that. It's built for relating to people. And I'm just stuck with QuickBooks, tax forms, bank reconciliations, you know, just all this stuff. It's almost as exciting as mowing the yard. And by the end of the day, you're just shot. And I know the days that I get up and I've got appointments where people are coming to see me, or I've got phone calls to make with people. Those are the days I look forward to because I know I'm going to connect with somebody about something. I don't know where it's going to lead, but.
Well, John, here's something that strikes me as I hear you tell your story. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Patch Adams.
Oh, yes.
Okay. You know, and where Robin Williams plays a medical student, and he's describing to another medical student why he likes the medicine. And he says, it's because we're catching people at their most vulnerable point, you know, and I want to help them. And I bet, I don't know, I haven't been an accountant, but I bet you get a number of people, not all your clients, but I'll bet you get people come to you in a very vulnerable point. They're tight on money. They haven't paid their taxes. They're scared. So I suspect that you actually are able to be a Patch Adams in that way, in that you're catching people at their vulnerable point.
You get that a lot, but I think even more so than that, there is rarely a financial issue that isn't an issue of the heart.
Huh.
when somebody comes in and they have a financial problem, there's almost always an issue of the heart somewhere. And that's what I love. I love digging for that.
That's amazing because I'm just saying it's amazing because you have eyes for that, that you know at the heart of this is an issue. It's not really the tax issue or the finances. And so, I mean, that says something very powerful about you and how you can bring this weightiness of your life to the work that you do. That's amazing.
It is amazing, John. I'm sorry, even if you don't admit it. I'm sitting here thinking most accountants would say when it's a financial issue, it's always a matter of the spreadsheet. All we got to do is pull out the spreadsheet and we can fix it. But I love the way you said it. It's always a matter of the heart.
So, John, we've got a few more minutes before your kind of 10-minute block is over here and
okay.
We go to Jack. But let me ask you, how do you listen to a person? What do you look for when you're meeting with a client because you love to connect at a heart level with them eventually? So that's one question. And then the follow-up question after that would be, and then tell us about this desire of yours and how you're kind of looking to offer that to others outside of work as well.
Well, on the first question, that's a good question. I'm not sure if I have a good answer for that. The first thing that comes to mind is what has helped me so much is understanding the larger story. And as people start sharing their tax situations or their business situations, most of my accounting practice is businesses, and I'm dealing with business owners. And so when they tell me their struggles, what they're having a hard time with, I'm always trying to look at that in terms of what's the larger story and what is their part of the larger story. And sometimes I don't really see anything, but sometimes you do. So I don't know if that answers the question very well. But what was the other question?
Well, and about outside of work. I mean, I know from our conversations you're doing some things outside of your work as a CPA and a partner in the CPA firm. You're doing some other things as well. Tell us about that.
In the past, I have been overboard doing other things, and God kind of took me on a wilderness journey the last 4 or 5 years to get me out of the go-go mode of, leading this and leading that and doing everything in the world. But I'm starting to try to dabble back into that, and one of the things actually that I'm doing right now is I'm trying to get Gary to come to Birmingham in January and do a base or a calling retreat here. And I almost feel guilty about that because my whole purpose is to attract 50 or 60 guys that I can then spend time with and go through their calling and spend time helping them discover the story of their life, that sort of thing.
Well, hey, don't feel guilty. You and I have talked about this. We've planned it, and I love it. Now, I think what I will be sharing at the retreat will be helpful for them. but one of my goals that I shared of that what are our transcendent pursuits for 2012 was to help other people walk in their calling, and so if I'm helping you do that, that thrills me even more. So. I love that you're doing that. You're taking this chance. It's going to take some work for you and I together, but you're just pushing out in every direction to bring the effect of your life to others. I think that's great.
Well, I'll say this one last thing, too. One of the things that you said in the calling retreat that really hit me was don't wait for your job or a ministry to come your way. Find out what your calling is, and then just go do it. And I thought, well, of course. I go to work every day. I meet with clients almost every day. I have conversations with people everywhere I go. Why not just, now that I've gotten a picture of what my calling is, let's take it to the office. Let's take it home. Let's take it down the street, just whatever. So that's been very helpful to me to get that picture and to move in that direction.
Good. John, thank you. That's That's just remarkable what you're doing. It really is good. Okay, Jack, you're on. Jack Lennedy, tell us about your kind of your story with that question.
You mean, what was the question?
This is going to take 10 minutes. Just to... Seriously?
Just tell us how you bring in your calling and all different kind of
areas.
Well, you know, first I just need to say that, like, John's story and my story, there's a lot of crossover in that. When I got into chiropractic in 1998, 99, I was convinced that it was all about being a good clinician and, you know, taking care of patients' needs in the physical ailments. And as I began to, you know, kind of live that out, I watched a guy that was successful in practice, and I just kind of modeled everything that, you know, he was doing, which at first was kind of successful in a way. I mean, I kind of needed to learn, you know, those technical skills and clinical skills. But as time went on, I began to just get really frustrated because I felt like, honestly, I was just a two-legged aspirin. And, you know, that kind of all I was there for was really to just get people out of pain, which in so many ways really felt like that was the end goal. I mean, I had patients coming in and, you know, my back hurts. You know, I had a headache, my neck hurts. I mean, whatever the different ailments were, it was, they were there to see me, you know, kind of correct or, you know, therapeutically improve those conditions. And that's still the case. It's not that that's different. I mean, that's still why people come see me. But at the time, this is probably, again, like maybe seven years ago, I really hit a low point in my career because that really felt like that was, you know, basically all I was, you know, designed to do kind of thing. And I was getting a lot of life from a ministry I was involved in. And a lot of relational, you know, just growth and enjoyment and watching guys, you know, develop. And I was helping disciple guys. And I became convinced that that was my calling, that I needed to kind of end what I was doing in chiropractic and begin to pursue, you know, full-time ministry and, you know, go help guys, you know, in this way or what have you. And, I almost went into that and essentially in full-time ministry to do that. It didn't happen, and it was definitely, I think, orchestrated by God, the whole thing. But what came out of that was basically saying, okay, what's my life about? You know, what I'm not enjoying my practice. I've been trying to be like someone else. That was a big part of it. I was taking on someone else's script. And I didn't see a lot of hope in it either. I thought, this is what people expect of me. You know, this is what people come to see me for. If I was an accountant, it'd be, you know, do my taxes. And that's what I'm paying you for. And I think that's the trap that I would say a guy may get into or a gal may get into. It's just that you start to believe, like, well, I spend 40 hours a week, I spend 60 hours a week, whatever it may be, doing this, you know, career or managing these this aspect of a company or whatever it is. And you start to just think, well, that's, you know, that's what I'm here to do. That's how I'm providing for my family. And it can definitely get in a tricky place where you feel like, you know, I do this to make life work kind of thing. So, but I was so frustrated in that. And when I think about, you know, making adjustments, for me, I had to really leave a practice that I was basically mimicking and go and try to find myself, actually. find out who I am and who I and how I'm supposed to practice, how I'm supposed to engage with patients, how I'm supposed to
you know, kind of basically practice chiropractic. And for, I had to make some kind of hard decisions in terms of, you know, not taking insurance anymore and, you know, changing my schedule to where I could spend a little more time with people. I ended up, I mean, these are just like little practical things that, that don't sound like it would make a huge difference, but it actually started making a big difference for me because it, it aligned more to who I was just, you know, discovering about, you know, how I'm built, the kind of work week that really was beneficial for me. And I had some, thankfully, some say in that. I know some guys, you know, that seem like they have a lot of say in that. But for me, I was able to make some decisions in that way. But it was a sacrifice nonetheless. I mean, I had to start, you know, lower my overhead, changing some things to kind of create the margin for that, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
Well, the thing that interests me about this, Jack, is you not only made some changes, you know, some adjustments so you can spend time with family, but then I know that you've been doing a bunch of other things like blogging, writing a lot, talking with guys. You're organizing a small group of guys to go through It's Your Call. I think you told me that you had tried coaching for a while. So
yeah.
You're trying other things, not just within your work.
Yes. And that's interesting you say that because that kind of took place as a result of making some, you know, changes and some sacrifices to kind of create that margin to be able to do that. In other words, I had to kind of let go of some things and I still am doing this actually. still trying to, you know, let go of expectations of what it means to be, you know, a certain type of physician or chiropractor or what have you, and actually say, no, you know, there's something about how I'm built, and if I can, you know, I want to try to create opportunity, margin, whatever, to live that out more, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so let me ask you, so you... You know, the fact is you have your own business. Yes, you have the freedom to change things. On the other hand, you also are going to take the financial hits from that as well, or risk.
You've got all the risk, yeah.
Exactly. So, but what I want to ask you is this. So how are you discovering what it is to bring Jack Lennedy into this practice, to be yourself there, versus how other people might do it? How do you go to work and know that you're, as much as you can, you're bringing your whole heart there, you're not holding anything back,
you're not just a two-legged aspirin.
That's right.
That's right. Well, if I think what you're asking, Gary, is one of the things I really enjoy is hearing somebody's story and you know, kind of not just what they're showing up in my office for, you know, if they're coming in, you know, and obviously the main thing is headaches, I kind of am pulling more into like, how are they living? You know, I just do this. I can't even, like you say, you can't stop what you do, but you just listen to, you're listening like what their relationships are. They divorced? Are they, you know, what kind of spiritual journey are they on, you know, what are their work life like, what the relationships like, you're just picking up on these different things. So some of that is just fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even need to really speak into that person's life. I'm just kind of not sizing them up or judging them. I don't, those are words that wouldn't fit that, but it would be more just trying to orient to their story and where they're at. So I get excited just to do that. Mm-hmm. As far as, like, clinically, I still take care of them the same, but I'm a little more free with myself and just being like, you know what, this person, you know, there's a whole package here that this person's bringing in. It's not just, like, it's interesting, John said, you know, they're bringing the taxes, but that's kind of just the thing that's bringing them in.
Right.
So I'm actually enjoying just, you know, trying to engage with them on, you know, other aspects of their life. And I didn't have that freedom before. Like, in other words, how I was practicing before, it was very clinical, very, you know, you don't wasn't really, you know, you need to engage in those ways. You just kind of take care of their, you know, physical ailment, period, you know. And so for me, the changes I kind of made in the approach that I take in my practice, I'm looking more at the whole person and really relating to them more.
I'm sure that people love it. I mean, I'm sure that they sense your attention and your care, and I bet they reciprocate. I bet they just love it.
I think so. I mean, I think, and the people that don't, here's another thing too. I think in your journey, you have to be okay with that you're, what you bring, what you offer is not necessarily welcomed by everyone, or maybe at different times in someone's life it would be welcomed, but you just can't allow the expectations of other people to dictate, you know, kind of how you do things. So for me, I had to let go of all that, and I'm still doing that. I'm still, you know, there's times where I still get pulled back and then, oh, no, this is what's expected, and this is what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I got to continually kind of grind against that in certain ways. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm just fascinated, and we're gonna jump to Barry now, but I'm just fascinated that really in many ways you and John are doing the same thing. You're using a particular skill and experience that you have to people, but using that as an entree into the deeper things of the heart, and, you know, and looking for that permission to come in, that word, that whatever is needed. That's just fascinating. So, Jack, thank you.
Yeah, and, you know, Jack, one of the things, I wish we had more time with each of you, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you and I talked before, one of the things that just fascinated me was how much time you're doing things outside. And, you know, you were talking to me before about not waiting for doors to open, but you're stepping through different doors. You know, you're knocking on the doors and going into all kinds of areas that are outside your job as well. I'm real impressed with all the different things you're doing.
Yep, really good.
Thanks.
So,
yeah.
Thank you. Okay, Barry.
Yes, sir.
Do you remember the question?
Well,
we'll have Jack repeat it for you.
Yeah. No, so listen, I think you do. So just jump in and tell us your story.
Well, I'm a by profession, I'm an engineer, petroleum engineer in the oil and gas industry, and what I like to do, what I'm compelled to do, is to teach and to write. And my wife won't let me stop with that. She says it's I combine ideas and information from all kinds of sources and all over the place and pull them together and try to teach lessons that pull people further up and in and relationship to God. And the way that shows up, we teach a married couple's class in our church. I mean, they're all younger than my own kids, and they're all having babies, and, you know, but it's just great fun to talk about what we've learned after 33 years of marriage and how we can help them and just talk to them. And then I work with a group we call Iron Men, which came out of my
Hello?
Oh, Barry, we lose you?
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So go ahead. Just pick up where you were.
Okay, yeah. You know, the Iron Man, and it was, that's been going on for 8 years. I never expected that. And we do book studies, and, you know, we've done Your Book, It's Your Call, and we've done lots of books. And another deal I do with men is called Journey Partner Group, and I meet with two of the young men, and we've really, you know, I just thought, how can I speak wisdom into these young guys and talk about calling, and have adapted some of the things you do on weekends and some other things. And it's a 10 or 12 week deal we meet, and it's just really adds energy to my life, and it's just what I like to do.
Now you talked about writing,
mm-hmm.
And you know this is who you are, and your wife knows this is who you are, so she's encouraging you. And you have, how many books have you written so far?
I've got two books out, and I can smell the third one. I mean, I've been, especially working through a couple of guys from through Noble Heart that I met, Kevin Miles and Bob Hartig, and working hard on that. And I've got it. You know, I've just said, okay, I've stopped editing. I told Cindy yesterday, okay, that's it. I got to stop. You know, because there's always more changes to make. And working on formatting it and putting that out. That'll be number three.
Wow. Okay. So, how is it that you actually go about doing all of that writing? In the midst of the career that you have?
I don't know. I can't stop. You know, I mean, it's one of those things I've just loved to write, and I've wanted to tell stories forever. And back in my past, two different clubs, a Rotary Club and later a running club, I volunteered to be the newsletter editor just so I could create a column to write. And newsletters take way more time. Club newsletters take way more time than they're worth, you know, as literature. But it gave me a reason and an audience, and I just had to practice that. And, you know, and so I just find time. I write early in the mornings, write in the evenings. And right now, it's a good time in the oil and gas business, and so I'm able to work 3 days a week. And it pays me enough money that I can have the other 2 days and spend time on things like writing and getting ready to teach and those kind of things.
Yeah. Okay. Because I know how much effort and time it takes to write.
Yeah.
And when you're adding that to the rest of your life, there's going to be some sacrifice. Even though I love the fact that you said, I can't stop, which is such
a strong sign
of who a person really is. Like you said, calling is something you have to turn off, not something you have to turn on. So,
I'm curious, how long does it take, would you say, how long does it take to write a book, one of your books?
Oh, I don't know, since 1986. I mean, because I just write all the time, and I try to pull things together, and the first one I put out was in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But it's from material and things that I've been working on for a long, long time, so I don't really know how to answer that.
But you still have to sit down at the keyboard and actually
you have to type it out. Yeah, you got
to
write it out.
It
just takes time. And research, you know, I got to go out and figure out, okay, how do I get better at this? You know, if you have a gift or a calling, you got to get better at it. It's an obligation, I think. So, you know, and study other writers and publishers and in the publishing world, and you know, it's just you just got to go to school on it. I think you got to treat the calling with respect. I think.
Now, I love that. I love that, Barry. Could you just talk about that a little bit? Because. So you feel a calling to be able to express, teach, explain things, but you said, I had to go to school.
Yeah.
Because you had a calling, you said, I want to treat it with respect.
Steve Prefontaine, the runner, used to say, if you don't run your best, you're wasting the gift. And I think there's a part of that. You know, just because you have a calling or a gift to express things doesn't mean you have a free ride from God. I think it's more of an obligation to step up. And that's really how I feel about it. And so I just got to get better at this. It's a waste of time, you know, and a waste of my life if I'm not. So I just feel like that's what I have to do.
Mm-hmm. So you don't feel like you're just falling off the bus and being able to do it. You're actually having to sit down and improve, study the masters.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I want to honor what he's given me. So I feel like I need to do that.
So let me ask you, with your paid job, how much of who you are do you feel like you're able to bring there?
You know, more than I thought I would. What I'm doing right now, I'm doing consulting work for a large independent here in Midland. And I always kind of tell people, well, I'm the company silverback. No, I mean, because all the young engineers are just out there chasing drilling rigs and doing stuff, and they need somebody to look at bigger projects, and that's me. And I'm in a little cubicle farm, which was kind of frightening to me because I'm such a introvert. I'd rather be in the corner in the dark in the back, you know, and you just slide the questions under the door. And I'm so happy living that way, you know. But here I'm in this cubicle, but what I learned was because I was out like that. These young engineers and engineering techs would come and start asking me questions. You know, what's in this whole well file? Why are they doing this? What are they trying to say? And it made me less scary, I think. So rather than being the old crotchety guy in the corner, I became an asset. And suddenly I was just happy about that. I'd come home and tell Cindy, guess what they asked me today, you know? And, you know, because they're not afraid of me. And they see an asset there. And, of course, anytime somebody asks you a question, like we've just heard from the two men, if they ask you a question about anything, it opens up conversation in life and gives you the freedom to talk about other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, okay, so what is it specifically that you love to write about? And I'm asking that for the sake of the guys on the phone,
yeah,
because I have several of your books, but
mm-hmm,
yeah.
You know, mostly I'm not a how-to writer. It's more of a what happened to me writer, memoir kind of a thing, and here's what I went through. But I think it comes across sometimes as a how-to because, you know, you tell personal stories and people tend to think about their own story while you're doing that. And it's surprising to me the more personal it is, the more people think it's about them. And so I think it comes across as that. And really it's about how to grow closer to God and deeper into God just through everyday life. The first book was about running and how I got into that and how it became a spiritual time for me and how God spoke to me so often through running. And then the next one was more about backpacking and the same thing, how I use backpacking to get away and feed my heart and then take guys up in the mountains with me and use that as part of the men's ministry. And this one I'm calling Remodeled and really about how God's just changed my heart. I love this verse in Ephesians 3:17. It says, I pray that Christ will be more and more at home in your heart. Hmm. And that phrase has just intrigued me forever since I heard that verse, Christ at home in my heart. You know, what does it mean to feel at home somewhere? Why do we feel at home one place and not another? And not only is he at home in my heart, but he's remodeled and decided to take it on. You know, much to my surprise, mm-hmm, I didn't think I needed that much.
Hey, I'm ready to read it. And you haven't
so
finished it yet.
Yeah, good. So you know, and so it's stories, but about what I learned. But what I hope happens from that is, as I talk about what I learned, that people connect with that and learn the same things.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So, guys, this has been fascinating to hear three stories in a row, quick succession, different men, but all trying to do the same thing, like we're all trying to do. We're trying to bring, you know, again, the compelling of our heart, the thing that we hold as dear to us to bring to this world, the brilliance that God has given us. And, you know, you guys have fought hard to make sure that you can do this in the midst of, you know, the other tensions of life that we did a base camp conversation on a while ago, just the tensions of I need to make a living, I need to bring food in here, we need relationships, we need a well-kept home, all those kind of things. And you guys are doing it, and that's why Sam and I wanted to highlight you. And we could probably do this with everybody in base camp. But, Sam, any final things, thoughts that hit you from all of this?
Well, I guess I would like to say to you guys, if you could just give one word of advice to people about walking more in your calling, you know, about doing something, what would your one word of advice be? One sentence, you know, one idea.
So, John, let's start with you.
I think the first thing that comes to mind is just go do it.
The Nike commercial.
I mean, that's what Gary said, and that's what really spurred me on. Just when you find out what your calling is, just go do it.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
That's great.
Jack?
Yeah, mine would be just along the same lines, but don't do someone else's script and start saying no to the things that just aren't you. I mean, if you're saying yes to things, you know, because you feel obligated to, or you think you need to do it to make life work, or you just, as much as you can, begin to stop doing some of the things that you know aren't who you are. You know, that's the trap we get into, is just thinking we got to keep doing things that really aren't who we are. And I guess, you know, and then it's a risk, but it's worth the risk, and just to begin to offer and pursue what you really believe and know about who you are. And right now, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's very good. Yeah. Barry?
You know, just commit to being a lifelong student. I mean, whatever the gift or the calling is, just get better at it and don't waste it.
Hmm. That's really good. And the idea that if it really is your gift, mm-hmm, your calling, the glory of your life, you really will probably, for the most part, enjoy pursuing it, learning, developing.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. That was a great question, Sam. Now, do you have any final thought?
Do I have any final thoughts?
Piece of advice, something that you would throw out as a...
Well, I'm going to throw out the advice that Jack gave me a couple days ago, which is, don't wait for doors to open, but just sort of go knock on some doors. So go to open some doors. Go try things. Jack had told me about something he had tried that he ended up finding it wasn't what he wanted to do, but he learned so many things from the thing that he didn't want to do that he felt it was like an invaluable lesson. It's like you can't make a mistake. He tried something, and I say try something. Just try something and learn from it.
Yep, that's good. And I would say, listening to you guys and wondering how to answer that question of yours, Sam, I think for me a really big thing that has helped me is this idea that the enemy will play the all-or-nothing game with us. You know, he'll do that with me. Gary, you have to do it all full-time, full speed, right now, or don't do anything. And I just don't find life works like that. It's usually... And so now, you know, and it goes back to what the other guy said, I just offer what I can with the amount of time I have, just somehow, whether it's with one person or a couple people or whatever it is, just offer it a little bit. It's something, it's what you can do, and then allow it to grow in time. But I just, the enemy always plays all or nothing. If you can't do it all, don't do it at all. And I just think, well, no, I'll just do what I can now in the moments, opportunities that come. And things seem to grow that way. So that's been
very
freeing for me.
That's really good.
Yeah. Well, everyone, this has been a really fun conversation. So John, Jack, Barry, thank you for sharing your stories. Sam, thanks for hosting this with me. And you guys, thanks for being on. It's fun to kind of gather around the fire together like this every week. So thank you.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks
thank
so much.
You.
This is really great.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
Very good. Okay, good night.
Good night.